You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. The Heat are optimistically selling tickets for next season, and Andre Iguodala is fighting the WNBA via Twitter, all of which I'll get into later in the show. But first, it's player award season, or at least the discussions around players seems to be generating considerable buzz, whether it's the MVP race or who makes the All-NBA team. The actual winners of these awards will be announced during coverage of the NBA playoffs, which will, of course, begin in late August. But the hosts of all 30 shows on the Locked On NBA Network submitted their nominations for five awards: the MVP race, Rookie of the Year, Most Improved Player, Defensive Player of the Year, and Sixth Man of the Year. And I'll also add my two cents about a sixth award category, and that's Coach of the Year. The Heat actually has legitimate candidates in five of the categories, surprisingly, so I'll get the other one out of the way first, which is the MVP race. It was a pretty tightly contested one as far as the hosts of the Locked On NBA Network are concerned. There were a number of votes for LeBron James. There were also some votes for his teammate, Anthony Davis. Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks also got some votes. James Harden with the Rockets got some votes. Kawhi Leonard got a smidgen of votes. But the overwhelming favorite was probably going to be Giannis Antetokounmpo. He was the most likely candidate considering the Bucks had the best record in the NBA. His incredible performance this year. He has been arguably the best player in the league as far as not just offense, but also defense. He has some consideration for Defensive Player of the Year, and a lot of people seem to think he might win the Defensive Player of the Year award along with the MVP, something that hasn't happened, I believe, since Michael Jordan did it during the, I want to say, early 90s. I can't recall exactly what year it was that Michael won it, but it's been quite some time. It's very, very rare that a player as committed as Giannis is to defense can do enough on the scoring end to justify that kind of a candidate. I think Kawhi Leonard probably had that same. He was somewhere in that race as well because he is always going to be a very good defender. But since his injury, it's kind of taken a lot out of him as far as the number of games that he'll be able to play. And so I think that hurts his chances considerably. I saw LeBron getting some Defensive Player of the Year. I'm getting ahead of myself here as far as the awards are concerned. But it's just they all tie in. If you've been listening to this show for some time, you probably know I am not a big fan of individual awards. The criteria to me always changes. I don't really ever know what it is that people are judging or how you can say they're impactful. Giannis is clearly a very, very good player. He's also surrounded by very good teammates. An all-star in Chris Middleton, a former all-star in Brooke Lopez, really, really good role players in George Hill and others. I'm drawing a blank here. Even Dante DiVincenzo is a good scoring player. You can't have a really good team and a really good record without having a very considerably deep roster that has some talent there. I think you look at Miami, and as good as Jimmy Butler has been, somebody who has transformed their culture and helped propel this team into a very winning record, I still think, you know, none of that happens without other guys on that roster stepping up. How much of that is due to Jimmy? I can't credit him for that as much as I'd like to. And so it's kind of difficult to say Giannis is clearly the best player. I saw other people saying that Brooke Lopez is a very good candidate for Defensive Player of the Year award too. So how do you judge that? Again, look at the Lakers situation where you have Anthony Davis and LeBron James both winning possibly garnering some votes for the award. That's a little tricky. Either way, it looks like Giannis is probably going to win his second consecutive MVP. I don't necessarily have a problem with that. The criteria is difficult, but I think if you look at historically whatever criteria you want to use, he fits it. Now, the other categories, that's where the Heat actually have a much better chance of winning them. The Rookie of the Year one was a little trickier. Kendrick Nunn, I think, has been a really solid performer. There was a piece that came out on ESPN recently, also by Zach Lowe, where he gave his own candidates and nominations for certain awards. Nunn was second in his voting, as it was for the Locked On Hosts voting, to Ja Morant for Rookie of the Year. Morant has been really, really good. I'll be honest with you. I voted for Morant. I think his performance on a team that a lot of people expected would not accomplish anything. Like, they were quite clearly rebuilding this year after trading away Mike Conley, after trading away Marcus Gasol. There was no chance of them really competing for a playoff spot, and yet here they are holding on to the eighth seed as we go into seeding games in just a few days. So they've done a phenomenal job, and a lot of that has to do with Morant. They've also gotten some really great contributions from their other rookie, Brandon Clark, who got some votes as well. But overall, I think Morant has clearly established himself as not just a very good player, but a productive one, and I think that that probably shifts things a little bit. None will get votes. It's great that he's had such an impressive start. I remember earlier in the season talking to Alvin Gentry, and he didn't even want to talk about future All-Star Bam Adebayo at that point in time because he just wanted to talk about the impact of Kendrick Nunn. It's a good story that he, quote-unquote, came from out of nowhere. He was an undrafted player, obviously, and he's been able to be very productive. There are still holes in his games, of which I've talked about numerous times, but overall, no rookie is perfect, neither is Morant. But I think he does a really, really good job of scoring for a team that's winning, and he's the lead player on that team, which is something that Nunn can't lay claim to. So I think that's part of the issue as well. The Defensive Player of the Year award was a little tricky. Again, according to the votes and according to Lowe, both saw fit to award Giannis Antetokounmpo as Defensive Player of the Year. Brook Lopez, his teammate, got some votes either also. So that kind of makes it a little tricky. I think you can say both of them are very, very great defenders. And that's fine. But I don't know how you can – there are no statistics that really, really skew towards picking a winner of a certain defensive category. It's very, very hard. It's a lot of eye test. You can look at certain numbers. Giannis is an incredible defender, clearly. So is Lopez. He does a very good job at center. The other people getting votes were Anthony Davis of the Lakers and my own vote, Rudy Gobert of the Jazz. I know Gobert had kind of an up-and-down year. I just still think his overall impact is undeniable as a defender. I think a little bit greater than either Lopez's or Antetokounmpo's individually, and as good as Anthony Davis is, also very good. Gobert got my nod. Bam, I don't think Bam's going to get any kind of consideration for Defensive Player of the Year. He might make an all-defensive team selection. I'm not sure. I think he'll get some kind of consideration in that regard, but as an individual winner, the statistics don't bear it out. He's very good at switching. He's just not going to be a guy who gets a lot of blocks or gets a lot of steals. And while he can shut down either ball handlers or bigs with the same kind of strength, I'm not sure that enough people watch every play that Bam impacts. And without any kind of statistical documentation to show his impact, it's going to be very, very difficult for him to be that kind of considered. I mean, this is part of why I have an issue with the criteria here, because, again, defensive statistics are up and down. They're inconsistent, and none of them really tell a full story. That's true of most statistics in general. But either way, you look at Bam's impact, it's undeniable, and yet you also have to watch all of his possessions. You have to watch everything he does. Otherwise, you look at a box score, and you're going to say, well, that doesn't really do much. And the Heat were kind of a surprise team. They weren't going to get the same kind of buzz as the Milwaukee Bucks team with a former MVP in Giannis. And so I think he gets that kind of attention, probably well-deserved. And either way, I think he's going to get a lot of the kind of consideration as Defensive Player of the Year. I don't think Lopez is going to do enough in the eyes of voters to change how they vote. I'll finish going over some of the award winners as voted on by Locked On NBA hosts from around the network before talking about potentially filled seats in the American Airlines Arena next season. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Start your morning with the news that matters in just 10 minutes. Axios Today host Niala Budu and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis and insight into the trends shaping our world. Who isn't looking to save money? And that's why rockauto.com is the place for you. You go, you find the parts you might be looking for. If you need to upgrade your car, if you need to make changes or fix anything, if you want to get those parts easily, go to rockauto.com. They've got a great website that's very, very easy to navigate. You just put in the car that you need or your car and the parts that you might be looking for. You'll get a full selection there. No matter whether you're a do-it-yourselfer or whether you're a mechanic, you find the parts. You get them delivered to you quickly, safely, cheaply, and they have really, really reliably low prices no matter what you might be doing, whether you're a weekend warrior who wants to do something on your car or whether you're a full-time mechanic. RockAuto.com does it easily and cheaply. They've been doing it for 20 years. It's a family business, and again, serving auto parts customers online for almost two decades. That's incredible. So they have everything that you might be looking for, and it's just a few easy clicks away. They've got a full catalog of parts that's easy to navigate. Just go to rockauto.com, and you'll see all the parts that are available for your car or truck. And when you see the section that says, "How did you hear about us?" just write "Locked On" so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's rockauto.com. Just a reminder to listen to, subscribe, and leave a review whenever possible on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and that you always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. So we're talking about some of the possible award winners during the NBA season. We've gone over some of the votes as given to you by Locked On NBA hosts from across the network. I've also got into some of the opinions from some of the other reporters from around the league, including Zach Lowe. Moving on to another category, six man of the year, the lone vote for Goran Dragic, mine, as you can imagine. A number of players getting a couple of votes here. Michael Bridges of the Phoenix Suns, Seth Curry with the Dallas Mavericks, George Hill even of the Bucks, Derrick Rose unfortunately getting a couple of votes for the Pistons. But the two candidates that seemed to run away with it were Montrezl Harrell and Dennis Schroeder of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Harrell is a very good player, kind of a miniature Bam Adebayo in that he impacts a lot of different things. He's a great rebounder, a great low post scorer. He's a very high energy guy, a little bit of a fulcrum in the offense as well, where he makes plays for others. And so I can see why he's such a key contributor there. But his teammate Lou Williams seems like he's getting considerable amount of consideration for this too. So that's, again, where do you kind of see, you know, who is a better sixth man as far as both of them are concerned? Williams, obviously, the more typical scoring player off the bench, regardless of his impact defensively or in any other case. He fits more of that mode. To me, that's kind of what Goran's been able to do. He's been a guy who comes off the bench and puts up a lot of points. He's been very, very good in that aspect, a very good shooter. He's also had some key buckets down the stretch in clutch situations, and I just like his overall game and impact. I think he fits, you know, along the same lines as Schroeder. I think Schroeder has done very much the same in Oklahoma City. He's just getting a lot of buzz because the Thunder are very much a surprise team as well. And as far as Harrell is concerned, he's more of a bench role player. No knock on him. He's a fine player. I think he'd be a great fit in Miami at some point just because of the whole approach and everything he does. He seems like a very Miami type guy as far as the culture and all that is considered. But I just don't see that he's been good enough to get that kind of consideration. So I'm not sure. Right now, again, it seems like Schroeder is going to win the award as far as what the Sixth Man of the Year race is and the Locked On NBA hosts. Zach Lowe picked Lou Williams somewhat surprisingly. So I have no idea where to go. I just don't think Goran Dragic is going to get the kind of consideration he deserves. As far as the Most Improved Player award, Bam Adebayo did get a lot of consideration from both Lowe and the Locked On NBA hosts, but the overwhelming favorite was Brandon Ingram of the Pelicans, who was not my vote. I gave it to Bam. I think Ingram has done a fine job of getting more opportunity on a team outside of Los Angeles and away from LeBron James. With Zion Williamson getting the kind of attention he deserves, he didn't play in many games. Ingram was a guy who was the lead scorer, the lead go-to guy, which is why his shot opportunities increased as much as they did. As far as Bam is concerned, he obviously got a lot more starts, a lot more playing time this season, and he's just has done a phenomenal job. I think when you look at a center and you look at what he can do from a playmaking standpoint, from a defensive standpoint, there are very few centers in this league that do what Bam does. And I'll call him a center even though he does play the four ostensibly alongside Myers Leonard. Either way, he is a playmaking big, something you don't see very often. Outside of Nikola Jokic, I don't think there's anybody in the league who's as good at creating opportunities for others as Bam Adebayo. And when you take that into consideration, his defense, which is, again, at such a high level, He is a phenomenal two-way player. He impacts so much on both sides. I don't see how he can't get more consideration for this. I like Ingram mostly as an offensive player. I think he's done a great job with the increased opportunities in New Orleans, away from LeBron, away from that system based around LeBron in Los Angeles. I still don't think he's quite the player that Bam is. And as far as the other candidates, Luka Doncic took another big step, again, as the man in Dallas. It's, again, the criteria is so difficult to determine as far as what your preferences are. I personally like Bam because he happens to be on the team that I cover. But I also like his two-way impact. I think is greater than any of the other players here. Devonte Graham for the Hornets, Norman Powell for the Toronto Raptors, Christian Wood, even he took a big step mostly offensively. I just like Bam's two-way impact a little bit more, and that's why he was my pick for most improved player. So that just leaves the coach of the year. And while Eric Spoelstra has done a really, really good job around a rebuilt Heat team with Jimmy Butler and a lot of different, you know, new players on this roster, I think he's gone through this kind of process before. And while that's tough to hold against him because he's gone through so many different iterations of the team over the course of his, 12 years now as head coach, I have to give my vote personally to Nick Nurse. And he was Zach Lowe's choice. Again, the Locked On NBA host did not vote for Coach of the Year. But I just, when you look at what the Raptors did, and they lost Kawhi Leonard, they kind of retooled their team, and I personally thought they were just going to call it in. I thought they were going to be done. And while they haven't certainly repeated as NBA champs, they are a contender. I think it's easy to kind of dismiss them because whether they're the Raptors and they've faltered so many times in the past. They lost a superstar in Kawhi Leonard. It's easy to write them off. But the fact that they're even in this position in the first place, I think, speaks incredible volumes about what Nurse does. And he's creative. He really knows how to connect with players. He gets the most there. His coaching from an X's and O's standpoint is very, very good. And again, his personnel management is such a big part of what coaching is. And he's done a really, really good job. He just vibes with his guys. And I think you have to give credit to that. And that he's gotten them to be a legitimate contending team at a point in time after which they lost their best player. I can't imagine, look at what happened in 2014 after LeBron left Cleveland. Again, maybe without Chris Bosh going through the blood clots, his first occurrence with blood clots, maybe that changes things. But if Chris had stayed healthy, maybe they would have been able to contend. It's hard to kind of envision it, but either way, Nurse has actually been able to get that. And they've also gone through a number of different injury issues too. They lost Kyle Lowry for a lot of time. They lost Pascal Siakam. They lost Gasol. They've lost everybody on that roster for quite some time. And he's just been able to plug and play players, get them to really contribute at a high level, and they've continued to win. And I think you have to give him credit for that. A lot of that is due to personnel, but I think he's done a really good job of getting the most of that personnel. And so I think he's deserving of the award. Again, Locked On NBA host did not choose a Coach of the Year candidate, but if I had to get my vote, I would put it in for Nick Nurse, as good a job as Eric Spoelstra has done. So Andre Iguodala is in the news for all the wrong reasons, which I'll talk about next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. During Tuesday's forgettable scrimmage loss to the Memphis Grizzlies, the halftime show featured an interview with Fox Sports reporter Jason Jackson and Heat President of Business Operations Eric Woolworth. Woolworth was speaking on a number of different things that have impacted the Heat this season. Of course, the coronavirus, the stoppage of the season, engaging and with fans about Black Lives Matter and other social justice movements. But he also talked about the plan for next season, and he actually delivered this quote to Jackson on the telecast. "We plan on playing next season in front of fans and plan on having a sold-out facility just like we've had since going back to 2009 for all of our games." He continues, "We're going to keep doing all the things we would do in an offseason, and we've been selling tickets right along, and I think it speaks volumes to the amount of interest that people in Miami have in our team, but also in the commitment that we have in the community and to make sure that we do play next year in front of our fans and figure out how to do it safely." Well, this is this is pretty interesting. And I think it's also a little misguided. And I just, looking at everything that's happening around the world, I am not an epidemiologist. I am not an expert on anything that's medically related. I just am, like you, looking at the news pretty regularly and trying to see what we can kind of discern about what the future of this world is going to be. I think it's very unrealistic to assume that we're going to have a very safe environment, that if you're going to have season tickets being sold, if you're going to have 10, 15, 20,000 people in an arena like the American Airlines Arena, there is no way that you could get that many people in safely and not risk contamination on a wide scale. It seems a little misleading to me for Woolworth to say that. Now, that's not to say that they haven't been going about business the same way. I think that's part of it. I've talked to a lot of the people on the business side. I know what the plan is. I know how it works out during the past season, that is. Not about next season, because honestly, I don't think there is going to be a next season. But as far as the process of selling tickets and what their plan is, they're always looking ahead. That's just the Miami Heat model. I think that's a lot of good, smart business models, is looking ahead, trying to figure out the next step to try and make as much money as possible, because that is what makes a business successful above all else. And so they have to encourage, they have to seem like they're optimistic, they have to always portray a positive face. And I think that's a lot of what this interview was, that they're moving forward with that plan. None of which really matters. Ultimately, who knows what's going to happen from the day to the next. They planned on having an additional 14 games at home back in mid-March. They also planned on having, you know, ticket sales and concession sales during the month of April and May when they had playoffs at American Airlines Arena. None of that happened because of the coronavirus and how it changed, well, basically the United States and the whole world and everything that we know about life itself. So I think, what else is he going to say? He is the president of business operations. He has the responsibility to a lot of corporate sponsors to say, no, we're going to do everything we can. We've been selling tickets. That money's going to get refunded. I'm sorry to tell you, if you're a fan, if you're a season ticket holder at this point, there's a very good chance that you will not be sitting at the American Airlines Arena for 41 home games next year. I don't see how that's realistic. I don't see how that's possible. And so this isn't a knock on Woolworth. He's doing what he has to do as a businessman, as the president of the team, and trying to show that they are proactive and doing everything that they possibly can. There's no chance of it happening. Right now, we have a few months in order to find not just some kind of vaccine, but to make that vaccine readily available to everybody. And given what we've seen over the state of healthcare over the last few months, that seems really unlikely. And so I don't see it happening. This is my opinion, first and foremost. I understand what the perspective of the Heat business office is and why their personnel is showing that they're moving forward. They're very, very proactive. Look, I've written about it. I've reported about it for Forbes. I know of what I speak as far as how they contact people and reach out to people, and they have a very, very great system of culling information based on your attendance at the American Airlines Arena and your past season ticket sales, even purchases of all kinds that you've made. If you've gone to the Heat store at any point online, there's a good chance that they've been able to track your purchasing style and method and be able to use that information to sell you season tickets of some kind in the future. Having said that, they're not going to be able to fill an arena safely at any point soon, at least not with things currently as they are. That doesn't mean that a vaccine won't be developed at some point soon, and hopefully that'll be made available to everybody. I'm just not optimistic about it. Anyway, moving on, I just wanted to address that because I thought it was somewhat interesting to see this being reported during a Heat scrimmage. Not that a lot of people were watching a scrimmage in the middle of a Tuesday afternoon, but it still was a little odd. And of course, Ira Winderman and I think some other reporters have picked up on it as well, and they wrote stories about it. So I have concerns that now everybody thinks, well, hell, everything's back to normal. Everything's safe. We're going to be able to resume life as it once was. I see enough of that shit already, and I got to be honest with you, it pisses me the hell off. I can't take my son anywhere. He's a year and a half old, and I'd love to be able to go to a store with him or go to the park and have a good time with him. And I can't do that because there are too many jackasses running around with no masks thinking that life is back to normal, and I can't risk his life. I'm not willing to contaminate myself. I don't care about my own life and what that's worth. I'm not I don't want to get sick, and I certainly don't want to die, but I can't risk my own contamination, even if I am asymptomatic, and the chance of passing that on to my son. And so when I see families of people at parks with dozens of other people and nobody's wearing a mask, and the resumption of a life that we all thought was torn asunder back in mid-March, it scares the hell out of me. I don't know what to do. I know that masks aren't foolproof, but they're a big step in limiting the spread of the coronavirus, and I think that's the most important thing to take away from this. There's other things that we can do, and hopefully we're all doing those as well. But anyway, I'm just going to pass that along. I also wanted to talk a little bit about Andre Iguodala. I'm running a little bit out of time here, so I'll try to make it brief, but I think it's important. Andre made the mistake of tweeting out something in regards to a Washington Mystics player, namely number 23, and he said something to the effect of, that number 23 on the Mystics is nice. I believe that was the original quote. Let me see if I can pull it up here real quick. I apologize for this, but yes, number 23 from the Mystics is nice. That was Andre's original quote. To which number 23 in the Mystics, a Ms. Ariel Powers, responded, "Put some respect on my name or keep this tweet to yourself." Of course, the following day, Andre responded with, "Ellipsis, no manners." And that was after a lot of people had already debated it online because it's the internet. And then, of course, unfortunately, Ms. Powers tweeted something out about a story that had been shown reported a few years ago, where Andre had mentioned that he didn't want his daughter in the WNBA because he didn't want her to become a lesbian. This is all complicated and ugly and stupid and the internet. I'll address the lesbian WNBA comment. That came back in 2016 when he was in the middle of a custody battle over his six-year-old daughter. And that was a comment made by his daughter's mother, Ms. Kalyana Worthen, who had apparently told a judge as she was battling for an increase in child support payments that Iguodala did not want his daughter playing in the WNBA or playing basketball at all because of his daughter's sexuality. I'm not sure what to make of that. Like, that's an absolutely ridiculous and homophobic comment. Iguodala later clarified that or added some clarification by saying he knew too many lesbian players in the current WNBA and he didn't want his own daughter going through that same process. That's not what it sounds like. It sounds like he's just basically been caught or something's been said about him and that he didn't want posted publicly. It's unfortunate. I like Andre. I think he's a fine person and player. He seems intelligent and well-spoken, at least from what I've seen of him. This seems really a typical of the version of the Iguodala that I've seen over the last few months. Unfortunately, it's been well reported, and a lot of people are just saying, well, that's just who Andre is. That is, again, really, really unfortunate. So, again, these comments coming in 2016 that Ariel Powers brought up recently, as far as his overall, the reason why we're even discussing this, the original tweet as far as number 23, I have to side here, not that it really matters what my opinion is, but I think that Ariel Powers is absolutely right. I think these women in the WNBA have done too much to try and gain the respect of people as an audience and other NBA players for him to tweet out just a number. I think it was a somewhat innocuous comment. I don't think he meant anything badly of it, but he still should have gone above and beyond to just try and find her name. I don't think it was that much trouble. And I think, moreover, he probably knew her name, but he just wanted to be kind of playful and just say, oh, number 23 is nice. We don't do that typically of male players. We don't say, oh, that number 14 is a killer. We don't. We don't refer to LeBron as number 23. We don't even refer to Michael Jordan as number 23. I think we all talk about male players as individuals, and then we kind of dismiss women players in the WNBA because they're women. And that's misogynistic. It's terrible. It's rather unfortunate. And they've just done too much to try and fight this on a day-to-day basis to kind of take a step back, especially from somebody that they consider a peer, an NBA player who just happens to be a male. I think there's been a lot of synergy between the two leagues, and I think that should continue to exist. I responded to somebody, some jackass on Twitter the other day who mentioned something to the effect that nobody watches the NBA anyway, and I use a derogatory comment because, quite honestly, I don't care what his opinion is. I think that's ridiculous. I think it's disrespectful. I think the WNBA game is a great game. that we should watch as often as possible. I think it's interesting. I think it's fun. There's a lot of great personalities there. If you like the NBA, you're going to love the WNBA just as much. That's just a reality. I don't understand why we have to diminish one in order to say that we like the other. The WNBA has done a lot to kind of gain more attention, and it's well-deserved. It's a fine game. And look, it's not about the fact that they're women players, because the women's NCAA tournament often does great numbers on TV. You just have to put the game out there. You have to show it, and people will say, you know what? This is actually a fun game. It's interesting. The women are fantastic athletes. Those games are really interesting and really fun, and you'll appreciate their tenacity. You'll appreciate their skill level, and again, the number of different personalities around the league, and so that's why the WNBA is a great league with a great product with great athletes, and for Andre Iguodala to again disrespect Ariel Powers by not mentioning her by name was a mistake, and it's unfortunate because it's not something that I think is indicative of Heat culture, and I don't think it's a typical of Andre's behavior, at least what I've seen of it, and hopefully that'll change over the next. I don't know. I don't know if he has. He doesn't seem apologetic. He doesn't seem like he's willing to take it back, and so that's a little bit of a concern, but. I'm going to drop the issue. I'm curious to hear what your opinions are about it. I know a lot of people will probably say, well, it's a WNBA. She's just being sensitive. I can only imagine that would probably lead to other worse and more inflammatory comments. I don't want to hear any of those. But I feel like we should be... I think Andre should do a little bit more to be apologetic and to show some remorse, because he has not, as of this point... In any case, I'll wrap it up for here. I'll be recording a mailbag to get us ready for the restart of the WNBA season. So make sure you send in your questions via email or Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. As always, I'll also bring you the latest info, what's going on in Orlando and around the NBA. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast right now on your favorite podcast app. You'll get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.
Wrap it up, Dean.